The conspirators never met to make their plans in the open, but in secret, a few at a time in each other's houses. As was natural, many plans were proposed and set in motion by them as they considered how and when they should commit the awful deed. Some proposed to attach him while on his way through the Via Sacra, for he often walked there. Others at the time of the comitia, when he had to cross a certain bridge to hold the election of magistrates in the field before the city. They would so divide their duties by lot that some should jostle him off the bridge and the others should rush upon him and slay him. Others proposed that he be attacked when the gladiatorial shows were held. They were near at hand, for then, because of these contests, no suspicion would be aroused by the sight of men armed for the deed. The majority urged that he be killed during the session of the Senate, for then he was likely to be alone. There was no admittance to non-members, and many of the senators were conspirators and carried swords under their togas. This plan was adopted. Fortune had a part in this by causing Caesar himself to set a certain day on which the members of the Senate were to assemble to consider certain motions which he wished to introduce. When the appointed day came, the conspirators assembled, prepared in all respects. They met in the portico of Pompeius Theatre, where they sometimes gathered. Thus the divinity showed the vanity of man's estate, how very unstable it is, and subject to the vagaries of fortune, for Caesar was brought to the house of his enemy, there to lie, a corpse, before the statue of one whom, now dead, he had defeated when he was alive. And fate becomes a still stronger force, if indeed one acknowledges her part in these things. On that day, his friends, drawing conclusions from certain auguries, tried to prevent him from going to the Senate room, as did also his physicians on account of vertigos to which he was sometimes subject, and from which he was at that time suffering. And especially his wife, Calpurnia, who was terrified by a dream that night. She clung to him and said that she would not let him go out on that day, but Brutus, one of the conspirators, though he was at that time thought to be one of his most intimate friends, came up to him and said, "What do you say, Caesar? Are you going to pay any attention to a woman's dreams and foolish man's omens, a man such as you? Are you going to insult the Senate, which has honored you and which you yourself convened, by not going out? If you take my advice, you will dismiss from your mind the dreams of these people and go, for the Senate has been in session since morning and is awaiting you." He was persuaded and went out. Meanwhile, the assassins were making ready. Some of them stationing themselves beside his chair, others in front of it, others behind it. The augurs brought forward the victims for him to make his final sacrifice before his entry into the Senate room. It was manifest that the omens were unfavorable. The augurs substituted one animal after another in the attempt to secure a more auspicious forecast. Finally, they said that the indications from the gods were unfavorable and that there was plainly some sort of curse hiding in the victims. In disgust, Caesar turned away toward the setting sun, and the augurs interpreted this action still more unfavorably. The assassins were on hand and were pleased at all this. Caesar's friends begged that he postpone the present session on account of what the soothsayers had said, and for his part, he was just giving the order to do this. But suddenly, the attendants came to summon him, saying that the Senate had a quorum. Then Caesar cast a look towards his friends. And Brutus approached him again and said, "Come, sir, turn your back on these people's nonsense and do not postpone the business that deserves the attention of Caesar and of the great empire, but consider your own worth a favorable omen." Thus persuading him, he at the same time took him by the hand and led him in, for the Senate chamber was nearby. Caesar followed in silence. When he came in and the Senate saw him, the members rose out of respect to him. those who intended to lay hands on him were all about him. The first to come to him was Tullius Cimber, whose brother Caesar had exiled, and stepping forward as though to make an urgent appeal on behalf of his brother, he seized Caesar's toga, seeming to act rather boldly for a suppliant, and thus prevented him from standing up and using his hands if he so wished. Caesar was very angry, but the men held to their purpose, and all suddenly bared their daggers and rushed upon him. First, Servilius Casca stabbed him on the left shoulder a little above the collarbone, at which he had aimed but missed through nervousness. Caesar sprang up to defend himself against him, and Casca called to his brother, speaking in Greek in his excitement. The latter obeyed him and drove his sword into Caesar's side. A moment before Cassius had struck him obliquely across the face, Decimus Brutus struck him through the thigh. Cassius Longinus was eager to give another stroke, but he missed and struck Marcus Brutus on the hand. Minucius, too, made a lunge at Caesar, but he struck Rubrius on the thigh. It looked as if they were fighting over Caesar. He fell under many wounds before the statue of Pompey, and there was not one of them but struck him as he lay lifeless, to show that each of them had a share in the deed, until he received 35 wounds and breathed his last. The body of Caesar lay just where it fell, ignominiously stained with blood. A man who had advanced westward as far as Britain and the ocean, and who had intended to advance eastward against the realms of the Parthians and Indi, so that, with them also subdued, an empire of all land and sea might be brought under the power of a single head. There he lay, no one daring to remove the body.